Hey, this is Jeff. We'll get to the show in a second. If you want to support the show or find back episodes of the show or find our other podcasts or find articles or quotes on early learning, all that kind of stuff is over at playvolutionhq.com. We're trying to curate the early learning world. Check it out. Here's the show. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
We are back with part 7 of our Stuff Someone Should Have Taught You Before You Started Working with Children series. This is technically part... There's another episode here. We called it Stuff Someone Should Have Taught You Before... Taught You About Parents Before You Started Working with Children.
Oh, man. And then the whole professional thing that I'm working on, but, you know, I don't want to get too far in the hat.
There's a typo. I typed parent, but not parent, so I got to go back and amend the file with an S, but that'll take... We probably don't need that in this episode that I'm talking about it, but I'm also not going to go back and edit it out. So where are we at, Lisa Murphy, with this list of things?
I think we're at the home stretch here of... information that we gathered from our devoted listeners. So things I wish that somebody had told me, these are her words: you need to have a huge bag of magic to get through the day. A song, a finger play, a game at the ready helps keep students engaged. And then she says, or in case there's a rattlesnake at your door and you need to entertain them while you wait for pest control. And there was I'm like, was this true? You're like, a rattlesnake came into your classroom? But I think my takeaway from this, to lift it up and make it a little more general, is you know, to be ready, you know, to have that song, to have those books, to be able to tell a story at the top of your head, because sometimes you might need to assist in navigating through a transition that was unexpected. She also says that engaged students are learning, and happy students and bored students potentially not so much. I'm going to link that back to if they're interested in what's going on. It really doesn't matter if it's a district mandated standard or if it's just the thing you have out that day. They're going to be interested.
Well, and to link that back to what we talked about in the previous episode about real play and play-like, there's a tendency for kids to be more engaged in the stuff they choose.
Correct.
Because their mind is interested in it. And so they're less likely to be bored when they're engaged in real play that they have power and control over. And
exactly.
So that's another reason to, maybe in your bag of tricks, you have ways to create those environments where play gets to happen.
Yes. One of the other respondents says, honestly, a good solid course on behavior management and now how to manage loose parts play. So I think she actually might have shared what she wishes she had been told way back in the day and now. So classroom management and loose parts play. I wish I had been told that you would lose sleep worrying about the kids even after they've left your room. I'm sure many listeners could share heartbreaking stories.
You know what? I don't have a lot going for me. I'm not tall, dark, and handsome, any of that kind of stuff. But I can sleep. Man, I'm good at sleeping. That's a valid and real thing for some people.
And I think I'm thinking of an anecdote from my early years of teaching too, where it wasn't even a family situation. It wasn't the community you're from situation. It's the classroom that I was funneling into was such a toxic environment for young children. And, you know, so did I lose sleep over it? Probably not. Did it break my heart that first day when she sat them down on the floor in her classroom, looked at all of them, they were 4, and said to each one of them, "You are not in Miss Lisa's room anymore." I still can see that. I mean, I data dump a lot of shit in my life, but that is right. I can still see her bent over looking at them.
What's her name?
That I don't remember, honestly. I can see her. I could sketch her face.
That's too bad, because it'd be fun to look her up and ask her some questions.
Oh, I still have the pictures. I mean, I have stuff that would prompt me remembering. And I'm not saying it. Like, sometimes I would say, I don't remember, but my eyes would be rolling because really I do, and I just don't want to tell you because you'll, like, find her on Facebook and say Lisa Murphy still thinks you're a bitch.
those people probably have a closed group on Facebook.
I used to work with Lisa Murphy too. Page.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, does she think you're a bitch too? Yeah, maybe that might be a thing. What else we got?
I wish I had been told that having appropriate expectations of littles is so exceptionally helpful, even for when others tell you that they're too little for that. My comment to this one is a reminder to think developmental as opposed to chronological in a lot of situations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, my easy example is that, you know, some two-year-olds can use scissors and cut paper just fine, and six-year-olds still give themselves that haircut, you know. So be mindful of just locking and loading on an age group being yes or no that they can do something. Plans are important, but it's okay to throw them out the window. I wish every teacher was told that.
Yeah, I mean, we get so, again, we have this compliance mentality, and so when teachers get locked in on, they need to comply and stick to their lesson plans and force the kids to comply and stick to the plan, and it ends up driving everybody crazy when the plan isn't.
No, the plan is compliance.
Yeah.
The grand plan.
Yeah, just letting it go and going, veering off in different directions is a valid choice.
I wish I had been told that a child's behavior is a form of communication, not a personal attack.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. A couple comments have been about, you know, the love we have for the little ones can be heartbreaking as they move on. We're in their lives for such a short time, and attachments, we build attachments with them just as much as they do with us. And then another person said to take care of our own emotional health. That really was a theme in this. And if you've listened to all of the episodes, I'm sure you've noticed that. But wishing that somebody had said and stressed the importance of self-care definitely was a theme.
Yeah, and that we've mentioned it before. That needs to be something programs start building in. It needs to be hard-baked into their policies and practices and staff development plans and those kinds of things. Because in the long run, it does improve the quality of care going on, but it also helps to do things like reduce turnover and those kinds of things. So you end up with a better functioning program all around when we address the fact that this is a stressful, frustrating, hard job.
I wish I had been told that you're never really organized. You're always going to lose something. I wish I had been told that you would never stop learning alongside the children and how important it is to have passion for the work that you do. And that goes back even to what Mike Bachman shared with us about that why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, why? Why are you even here in the first place? I wish I had been told, and I think I might have said this one already, but I didn't mark it as such, but being in control and being an effective teacher are not mutually exclusive. And for what it's worth, even if I did say that one already, that one is worth repeating.
Yeah, and in fact, with the play versus play-like thing that we just went through, being not in control is maybe more effective in a lot of situations where you can relinquish that control in the classroom. It empowers the other people in the room to be in control, and that seems
well, that definitely takes time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's hard to create that environment.
And what would it look like? I remember Dan Hodgins telling me early on in my career, he said at one point, he goes, I want you to let the room get out of control at one point. And you're like, why? And he's like, well, you know, first of all, I want you to see that the out of control that you have made up in your head is not actually what happens. And then where I went with that after was that I also want to make sure that as a professional in the field and as somebody who occasionally is mentoring other professionals in the field, I want to make sure that you trust yourself to be able to bring it back.
Yeah.
Should the situation call for that. And if you're teaching from a place of fear, if you're always worried that things are going to get out of control, you know, I don't think teaching from a place of fear is a very comfortable place, and I don't think you'd want to stay in that spot.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Long. I don't know anything about this. But I'm gonna talk about it anyway because it's kind of my thing. It's kind of my jam. They have like I think that like defensive driving courses and everything, and you can go out to I think they've got one outside of Phoenix, and you're out in the desert. And it's all flat, but you learn how to do all this
like
fancy
sexy driving
stuff. Yeah, but I mean, part of that is you get yourself out of control just so you can learn how to be in control.
In control.
And it's kind of like that thing. You learn how to, you let yourself spin out so that you can learn how to bring yourself out of the spin
exactly.
in the future. So I think it kind of fits into that, I guess.
It does. No, I was having a thought. Because there are days, just to keep with this losing control or out of control,
yeah.
There are days that your classroom might appear to be going out of control that has absolutely nothing to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so to think that somehow you magically are going to be able to bring it back into you might not be the boss of why it happened in the first place.
Yeah,
you know, so I that's too much responsibility. So I think there's different ways. I mean, you could probably have a whole podcast of unpacking just the notion of control. You know, we talk a lot mm-hmm. about giving up control. We probably
yeah,
have done. I mean, you're looking at the catalog.
Yeah, we've probably done it three times.
The catalog of episodes is going to need a binder here in the next little bit of time. I wish I had been told that not all educators are going to share the same passion and philosophy.
Yeah.
I wish I had been told that you only get paid monthly.
Well, you know, as advice going in, maybe that's something you ask during the interview or the onboarding process when you take the next job.
Yes.
Ooh, there's a long one.
It is, and I'm scrolling. She talks about, she said this, and I'm going to toss it out there. I don't know how everybody's going to respond to it. She says, first-year teachers have no idea what they're doing 60% of the time, but the 40% they've got is better than they think and should be valued.
Yeah, okay.
Spend less time on your classroom and more time on establishing relationships.
So that relationships are more important than bulletin boards?
Yeah, surprise! the importance of advocacy and taking risks. Advocacy comes up, those emojis jumped up. Advocacy comes up in so many forms in this field, and the more people actively involved in putting children first, the better. I wish I had been told that you will be micromanaged by people who only step foot in the classroom to see how many drawings you have hanging up.
Yes, we need to rise up against the educrats and take back the profession. I don't know what that looks like. We got to march into their offices and grab them by their wheelie fancy desk chairs and push them out of the parking lot and take over the building. I don't know. You guys figure that out. I'm just here for the ideas.
And the last one that was in the thread was how important adult relationships are.
Yeah.
And we've heard that a bunch of times, but I thought it would be nice to end cap on that because it really has permeated a lot of these episodes that we've done. Relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, coming up probably in the next episode or two, probably, we're going to dig into professionalism because an offshoot of this batch of episodes was a discussion on the Facebooks about professionalism and what it was like to be a profession and how you saw yourself.
How come you feel you're not treated like a professional? How would you know if you are being treated like a professional? Or how do you interpret that you're not being treated like a professional? What does that look like for some of you? And let me tell you, there have been some very, very passionate posts.
Yeah, yeah. And we kind of dug into this a little bit back at episode 500 when we did the ECE Live event. But we'll be back with some more of those, and they kind of dovetail nicely mm-hmm. with this batch that we've done. And so I'm hoping that, you know, I doubt that this is going to be used in any official onboarding process, but if you're hiring a new staff, going back through this 7 or 8 episode arc and listen to them and kind of making some notes about what people would like to know or wish they'd known might be a useful tool when you're bringing new staff into your program, kind of a welcome wagon kind of basket of information.
Is that still around?
I don't know. It should be. Here's a basket of ideas that other people in this profession from all over the place wish they'd known, and here you go. Welcome to the profession. Maybe
this
include...
is our own competencies list.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, just don't throw this information in there. Put in some muffins, maybe some Cheez-Its.
And lotion.
Yeah, some lotion, Starbucks gift card, and you're good to go. Any more on this before we wrap her up? This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. I mentioned ECE Live. The way you find that is you go to Ooey Gooey Inc. on Facebook or Explorations Early Learning on Facebook. You look under Events, and then you find ECE Live. It's, see, we named it that way so it would be easier to find. And then on that site, there's going to be a link, and that's the same link we meet at every Wednesday night at 7:30 Central Time. And then, and all you need is a device that can open a website pretty much, and you can turn on your video or not, and you can turn on your mic or not. You can just be a lurker and hang out and listen. You can be an active participant. I mean, participate at your own comfort level. We've had some people that just kind of hang out quiet for a little bit and then jump in, and it's whatever you want, and it's an opportunity to engage with us and other people that are passionate about playing early learning who want to hang out a little bit. So that's what that is. Back soon. Bye-bye.
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 This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.